at 8:03, according to the KZYX and Z digital clock. You are in tune with your community radio station. It is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg. Altogether, we're Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio, also streaming on the web at kzyx.org. Radiograms coming up next. You are still in tune with your community radio station. It is KZYX and Z. This is Radiogram, and I am Belinda, here to bring to you two of those kind of strange hours of stuff that I've been bringing to you for Radiogram in the temporary but extended absence of Jamie Roberts. He'll, of course, be back in a couple of months. Until then, it's you and me, baby, and we're going to be having as much fun as possible with Radiogram from now until his return. So much, as always, to go tonight. We'll be doing a couple tributes to the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who passed away last night, and we'll also probably look a little bit to outer space before the night's over, and otherwise just a random amalgam of spoken word, documentary, and, storytelling stuff in the meantime. Figure I'll take a more laid-back approach tonight, and next week come in with a show for love on the 13th. Of course, that's next Wednesday, the day before Valentine's Day. We'll save it up for that, because it's all about love here at KZYX and Z. In the meantime, we'll plug on through tonight's Radiogram, which is brought to you tonight by our members. Hey, that's you. And we hope that you'll remember to tune in here at KZYX and Z tomorrow morning for Wild Oak Living with Johanna Wild Oak, as she has herbalist Ryan Drum and Mary Pat Palmer on for a talk about the application of herbs for self-care during this cold and wet winter. You'll want to be sure to tune into that as they discuss respiratory health, thyroid and hormone balancing, seaweed, and many other applications for herbal medicine. That's all tomorrow, 9 a.m., Wild Oak Living here at KZYX and Z. In the meantime, we hope you enjoy this.
Music. So forget about me going to Nashville and listening to country music or turning the television on and listening to it, because I don't do it. I like good music. Any of the others except country. Now there are two or three pieces in country music that I like to hear, but most of it, no way. I don't see how in the world anybody could enjoy that screaming. And they'll get up on stage. I've never been to one, but I've seen it on television. They get up there and those women, those men, they go to crying and squeezing their face around in all kinds of shapes. It makes you uncomfortable to even look at it. I look away. I just look away. If they can't perform and do it in an orderly manner, I don't want to look at it. They act like they're in misery and torment. And I don't want to sit here looking at somebody like that who's in torment and trying to get out what's supposed to be inside of them. I don't like country music, usually. Of course, there's good in everything, that's true, but not in country music. Not very much, no. I have to keep my mouth shut. You know what I'm talking about. I don't want country music lovers to hate me. Of course, they shouldn't. Because what I like, and what I don't like, and they do the same thing. Classical music is good, but I don't want too much of it. Gets in my system and it overflows and it chokes me. I don't like too much anything, musically or in any form.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Paul Evangel speaking to you from the terminal of life near the gate of death, where along with many others, we will shortly be boarding the Interworld Airlines flight FINAL for the New Jerusalem. This is the very first time that anyone in broadcasting has been given the authority to actually witness and describe the flight of a departed soul and relay the information so that you can hear, experience, and prepare yourself for this heavenly journey. The terminal is very crowded today, and we are told that this is not at all unusual, for eventually all people of all nations will pass through this point of separation.
Attention, please.
Let's listen to the dispatcher.
Interworld Airlines flight FINAL, non-stop supersonic service to the New Jerusalem, is now ready for boarding at the gate of death. Passengers holding confirmed reservations for this flight may proceed immediately to this gate through the blood-sprinkled concourse. Because the exact time of departure is uncertain, you are urged to remain ready at any moment. Thank you.
The crowd seems to be milling about, most everyone talking, some praying, some laughing, with only a few people acting as if they were paying any attention to the announcement. They are making ready to leave on this flight. Who are these that were listening to the dispatcher and responding? Well, with close observation, we notice that each one of them has a ticket in his hand. Sir, could I see your ticket for just a moment so that I can tell our audience about it? Thank you. It says, issued from Mount Calvary by the chief agent, the Holy Spirit, and it has been officially stamped with the blood of Jesus Christ. Here you are, sir. Thanks again. God bless you. I notice, too, that each of the ticket holders is carrying his own baggage. I'm told each one is furnished with the baggage of grace and godliness. No sad faces seem to be here to enter the gate of death. Everybody is beaming. One of the passengers seems to be singing. Let's walk along with the portable microphone and see if we can pick up just a little of his song or phrase.
already been dead. Come on, now that wheelchair, praising God. God hasn't finished with you yet, has he? In the name of the Lord, come on. Now that wheelchair, praising the Lord. And the doctor tells her she's supposed to have already been dead. Well, but that isn't what the Lord said. Look, oh, isn't that good? Praise the Lord. Are you born again? And you don't use tobacco in any form? You can't ever smoke again. Never, never, never. In the name of Jesus. Pepper, praise the Lord, everybody. Pepper, praise the Lord. Pepper, praise the Lord. Out of the wheelchair, praising the Lord. In the name of Jesus. 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 Well, I accept it right now for everything. Everything you need. Now you're going to stand right there in front of the wheelchair. Stand right in front of your wheelchair. Say, oh God, save my soul, forgive me my sins, deliver me from the smoking habit. I'll never smoke again, so help me God. I believe Jesus died for me, and I will serve him. Say, come in, Jesus. Come in, Jesus. Jesus, are you born again? See, you look so good. Can I agree and keep trying to get well? Take anything you need. Hallelujah, the God of miracles lives. Did you know that? What's wrong? You have an automobile accident, damaged your spine. Are you born again? You don't use tobacco in any form. In the name of Jesus, I command the spine to be recreated.
Let's turn on. By that, I mean the power of the mind. Let's learn how to use the power of our minds, how to have a great self-image without the use of anything else. First of all, let's get rid of all the spookiness of hypnosis. Let's explain exactly what hypnosis is, because it's not what most people think it is. Most people think that when you are hypnotized, you're in an unconscious state, that you're not aware of what you're doing, that you are following the orders of someone else, that they have a power over you, which is completely wrong. First of all, a hypnotist does not hypnotize you. You hypnotize yourself. A hypnotist is a guide. He says words or she says words. You follow the words. They are suggestions. You take the words and you put yourself into a hypnotic trance. By a trance, that means that the body is completely relaxed, that the one mind is in a so-called sleeping state. That's where the word sleep comes from. The other mind is completely alert, completely aware, but can only concentrate on one thing at a time. In this particular case, the hypnotist's voice, or your own thoughts. The power of concentration, even when you do it to yourself, actually puts you into a hypnotic trance. When you're under hypnosis, you're completely aware. You can come out of hypnosis anytime that you want to. When you are taking a hypnotic suggestion, you are taking it and reacting to it because you want to. If a hypnotist suggests something to you that you do not want to react to, you will not. Most people do not realize this. So if you picture bad images in your mind and think negative thoughts of yourself, if you really don't want to accept them, you won't. But if you dwell on them, you will accept them, and it becomes like a daydream. You think about it and think about it, and you develop a negative personality. So turn yourself around, turn yourself on. Think positive thoughts, picture beautiful things. As you go to sleep at night, think of what you would like to do tomorrow. Think of like what you would like to be tomorrow. Think of how you would like to react to others tomorrow. Daydream, but daydream with positive thoughts. This is self-hypnosis. For some strange reason, the more that you dwell on something in your mind, your subconscious, which is your inner mind, pushes you towards it. Sometimes you will completely forget about the things that you thought of as a child, the things that you daydreamed, and yet you find yourself taking that road. You must unhypnotize yourself from false beliefs. You must use your power of rational thinking. You can do marvelous things. This is not an escape. This is not a way to run away from life. This is a way to curve your life, to make your life the way you want it to be, so that you can acquire a habit of happiness. It's all in you. It's in all of us. It's just that most of us don't use it. Most of us don't tap on that inner door. Most of us don't turn on. You can sit and concentrate and relax and think about every muscle in your body relaxing, and that will turn you on. That will hypnotize you. You can hypnotize yourself into thinking all the positive things and becoming all the things that you really want to believe. But you must do it yourself. Even as a good hypnotist who hypnotizes you cannot make you get up out of a chair and dance unless you really like to dance. But sometimes we like to dance, but we tell ourselves we can't, so we never let ourselves find out. You must unlock all of these doors to your real personalities. You must find all the creative opportunities that are inside of you. It's like a meditation, but it's actually self-hypnosis. Now, if you want to try to turn on, sit back in a straight chair or lie on a bed. Find something that you can stare at, something you can fix on. Maybe play some soft music. Let yourself be undisturbed. Now concentrate on that one object and stare at it and start breathing deeply, very deeply, and this will relax you. And then let your body grow very heavy, let your body grow very tired. And then close your eyes and start picturing beautiful, beautiful scenes. Just beautiful things like running water over a stream or clouds floating in the air. Let yourself become happy. Now, picture yourself the way you'd like to be, the real you. Turn yourself on. If you want to be thin, picture yourself thin. Every day for at least 5 minutes, do this. If you want to help yourself in any way, get rid of bad habits, for 5 minutes, turn on. Picture yourself getting rid of this bad habit. Picture yourself having better thoughts, living a better life. Go ahead, turn on. Let yourself have more life from the years that you have. Get that winning, winning feeling by turning on. Now remember, just sit back, stare at something, breathe very deeply, relax your body, close your eyes, and turn on. Relax and let your own success that is there, somewhere, in there, at that inner door, come out and work for you. Think the positive thoughts. Before you do it, think positive thoughts. While you are actually putting yourself into this trance, think positive thoughts. As you are bringing yourself out of the trance, think positive thoughts. Don't walk in thinking this is not going to work, and then lie down or sit down and talk to yourself, because it won't work. Think positive. Turn yourself on. Picture yourself turning a doorknob, opening a door, and all the beautiful things there, all the beautiful things that you want for yourself, can become yours. And if a barrier gets in your way, think of yourself jumping the barrier, conquering the barrier. You cannot appreciate the good if you don't have some barriers, some of the bad. If it was all good, you wouldn't enjoy it. Most of us have more personality than we think we have, but we give ourselves negative thoughts and we hold the personality in. So turn on, lie down, now stare at something. Take deep breaths, relax, close your eyes, let your body tingle, keep breathing deep, and let yourself turn on. Keep turning on, thinking all of these things. There is success in you. There is positive attitude in you. There's a better looking you, a healthier you, a happier you. And you can do this all by yourself. You need no one but you, because in reality, you run your own life. You are the one that does it, not the hypnotist, not the parent, not the teacher. You are the one that accepts the suggestions and takes them or leaves them. So why not turn on and make it better for you? Now, go along with me as I turn myself on. I'm going to sit in this chair, get very comfortable. Place my feet flat on the floor, my hands in my lap with my palms upward, not clasped, Now I've found an object to stare at. And I'm going to stare, and I'm going to breathe very deeply. And I'm going to relax. I'm going to relax every muscle in my body. I'm going to concentrate, starting with my toes, and think about them relaxing. My ankles, my legs, let everything get very heavy and relaxed. And just breathe deeply. Everything's getting very, very heavy and very relaxed. Now my eyes are heavy, and I want to close them. And I'm going to give myself a suggestion, a signal to close them. So when I count to three, my eyes will close, and I will relax completely. One, two, three. Now I am completely relaxed, and I will concentrate only on my thoughts. I will let nothing, nothing bother me. I will think positive things. Yes, I am thinking positive things now. I am picturing beautiful things. I am picturing wind blowing in the trees and sun shining through the trees. And I'm breathing deeper, and I'm so relaxed. And now I'm picturing myself. Successful, smart, liking people, communicating with people. That's what I like, to communicate with people, to help them, to show them, to entertain them. I'm relaxing more, and I'm getting so drowsy. And yet I can speak to you. I'm completely turned on now. Relaxed. I hear music in my mind. And my imagination is going wild. Things are buzzing around and around in my imagination. Beautiful things. Nothing negative. No, I would not let anything negative come in here, not with me. Just beautiful things, positive things, and I'm relaxing more. I picture myself tomorrow, getting up, enjoying the day, enjoying the children, enjoying all the beautiful things that are around me. And if trouble comes, I'll conquer it. We'll conquer it. Me and my inner mind will conquer it. We won't let anything stand in our way. And I'm so relaxed and I tingle all over. I need nothing, nothing but myself. I'm so relaxed. Every muscle is relaxed. My mind is at peace. I've completely turned on. And everything is so beautiful. I can't pick out which thing I want to think of first. Yes, I want to think of my baby daughter and my husband. And there are my friends. And there is my work and how I'm going to treat it. And I'm going to be very successful. And all the nice people. That's what helps you turn on. Yes, I can see them all now. And it's beautiful. And it's so relaxing. And I just want to sit here and see all the beautiful, positive things. But I must awaken myself now. I must bring myself out. But I tell myself that next time I turn on, I will turn on stronger and deeper and more positive. And I will help and I will teach people how to do this. Now, I'm going to give myself a signal to awaken, to turn off. One, two, I know on the count of five I will turn off. Three, I'm full of energy, I feel great, the sun is shining. Four, and five. What a wonderful thing you can do with your mind. Why don't you try it over and over? Over and over. Try this. Try it, and you will be successful. You will get the habit of happiness. You'll have personality. You will remove all the emotional scars, and you will give yourself a facelift. But most important, you and your mind can learn how to turn on.
Watch it, watch it. Watch it, watch it. Watch it, watch it. Watch it, watch it.
It's so nice to finally feel the times changing on. Happy to say that everything new is old again. Everything old has been retired. And even though you say you're on a roll, I'm the one who lets you know. No one's falling for it.
Watch it, watch it.
No one's falling for the new
watch it, watch
you. No one's falling for not a peep out of you. Don't peek, you're gonna freak out when you see how I can make you dream like a slot machine. Drag it out of me, but just drive away. Hell bent. Cause when the loners get together, it makes no sense. When the loners get together, it makes no sense.
Watch it.
No one's falling for it. No one's falling for it. No one's falling for it. No one's falling for the new.
Watch it.
No one's falling for the new you.
Watch it, watch it. Watch it, watch it. Watch it, watch it.
I love it when the flaws come out to play. Of rock and roll, what's it all about? Is it just promotions? Who's keeping score?
Watch it.
Not a peep out of you. You peeked last week. You can dumb me down, but just wait around. Cause they're not falling for it. No one's falling for it. No one's falling for it. Everything old has been retired. Everything new is old again. Everything old has been retired.
Watch it.
Still not falling for the
new. Watch it.
Still not falling for.
Watch it.
Still not falling for
the new.
Still not falling for the new.
Falling
for it. Still not falling for it. Still not falling for it.
Not
even
last week.
You can tell.
We have a couple of lost animals to tell you about tonight at Radiogram. We've got a brown terrier missing. His name is Max. He was lost around noon on Tuesday near Scotts Valley Road in Lakeport. He's wearing no collar, but he has a scab on his ear from another dog bite. If you know anything about this dog, please call Logan at 972-8089 or call 391-6904. Also, we have a found dog. Hopefully this dog's going to get reunited soon. He's an old black and white hound dog found on Mason Knight Road in Navarro. The dog does not have a collar and is deaf. He's at the Navarro Road Department Shop, and the phone number to call if this is your dog, 895-9666. Moving along here at Radiogram, I mentioned that we were going to do a little something for the passing of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and I think I'm going to go to a little audio from the Maharishi's 91st birthday party in Holland. That was just about 2 months ago. It's a conversation between David Lynch, the filmmaker David Lynch, and Donovan. And we'll jump right into that right here tonight at Radiogram.
I'm watching you on the Maharishi channel. Hello to you, Donovan.
Hello, David.
My dear friend Donovan, I saw you sing the Isle of Alay, and for everyone, you know, Maharishi may have called that a transcendental song, but maybe Donovan already said, but Maharishi called Donovan his transcendental musician. Such a huge... And Hurdy-Gurdy Man, what a song about Maharishi. When the time demands it, the Hurdy-Gurdy Man comes. Maharishi comes and turns the night into day. So beautiful. And Donovan captured the majesty of Maharishi in Hurdy-Gurdy Man. And I think I should read... what I always read after Donovan's fantastic concert. And Donovan, I don't know if you want to play some chords.
I think I just might.
But I'll just imagine them. May everyone be happy. May everyone be free of disease. May auspiciousness be seen everywhere. May suffering belong to no one. Peace. Thank you to His Holiness Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Jai Gurudev.
Here comes the hurdy-gurdy man, Maharishi, singing songs of love. Thrown like a star in my vast sleep, I open my eyes to take a peep, to find that I was by the sea, gazing with tranquility. Just then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing the songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing the song of love. Hurdy-gurdy, 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 gurdy, he sang. hurdy gurdy, hurdy gurdy, hurdy gurdy, gurdy sign. Hurdy gurdy, hurdy gurdy, hurdy gurdy, gurdy sign. Ah, 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 ah. Histories of ages past, unenlightened, the shadows cast down through all eternity, the crying of humanity. 'Tis then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing the songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing the song of love. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy, gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy, gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy, gurdy-gurdy, he sang. One night in the ashram when I was playing this song, my dear friend George Harrison turned to me and he said, I could write a verse for that song, Don. And he did. But for some reason, the song is missing George's verse. Many years later, I recorded that verse, and I'd like to sing it tonight. I know Maharishi had a very special place in his heart for George, and although George is not with us in the body, George, you are here tonight in spirit. George wrote, when truth gets buried deep beneath a thousand years asleep, time demands a turnaround, and once again the truth is found. Yeah, George. Awakening the hurdy-gurdy man who comes singing the songs of love. Here comes the hurdy-gurdy man and he's singing the songs of love. Maharishi is the hurdy-gurdy man, he came singing the songs of love. I am the hurdy-gurdy man, I come singing your songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy, gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy, gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Here comes a hurdy-gurdy man, and he's singing the songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy, gurdy-gurdy, he sang.
Thank you, Maharishi.
We shall have everything we want, and there'll be no more dying on the pretty plains or in the supper clubs. For our symbol will acknowledge vulgar materialistic laughter over an insatiable sexual appetite. And the streets will be filled with racing forms, and the photographs of murderers and narcissists and movie stars will swell from the walls and books, alive in steaming rooms, to press against our burning flesh, not once but interminably, as water flows downhill into the full-lipped basin, and the adder dives for the ultimate ostrich egg, and the feather cushion preens beneath a reclining monolith that's sweating with post-exertion visibility and sweetness near the grave of love. No more dying. We shall see the grave of love as a lovely sight and temporary near the elm that spells the lovers' names in roots. And there'll be no more music but the ears and lips, and no more wit but tongues and ears, and no more drums but ears to thighs, as evening signals nudities unknown to ancestors' imaginations. And the imagination itself will stagger like a tired paramour of ivory under the sculptural necessities of lust that never falters, like a 6-mile runner from Sweden or Liberia covered with gold. As lava flows up and over the far-down somnolent city's abdication, and the hermit, always wanting to be lone, is lone at last, and the weight of external heat crushes the heat-hating Puritan, whose self-defeating vice becomes a proper sepulcher at last that love may live. Buildings will go up into the dizzy air as love itself goes in and up the reeling life that it has chosen for once or all, while in the sky a feeling of intemperate fondness will excite the birds to swoop and veer like flies crawling across absorbed limbs, that weep a pearly perspiration on the sheets of brief attention, and the hairs dry out that summon anxious declaration of the organs as they rise like buildings to the needs of temporary neighbors, pouring hunger through the heart to feed desire in intravenous ways, like the ways of gods with humans in the innocent combination of light and flesh, or as the legends ride their heroes through the dark to found great cities where all life is possible to maintain as long as time, which wants us to remain for cocktails in a bar and after dinner lets us live with it. No more dying. The next poem is called To Hell With It. And the actual occasion of the poem is not that two friends of mine died, but obviously it was in the back of my mind, if not the front, when I wrote it. And I think that probably after the initial shock, death makes me angrier rather than sadder as an event. To hell with it. Hungry winter this winter. Meaningful hints at dismay, to be touched, to see labeled as such. Perspicacious Colette and Vladimirovich meet with sickness and distress. It is because of sunspots on the sun. I clean it off with an old sock and go on. And blonde Gregory dead in fallout on a highway with his Broadway wife, the last of the Lafayettes. How I hate subject matter, melancholy intruding on the vigorous heart, the soul telling itself you haven't suffered enough, Hialo Miel, and all things that don't change, photographs, monuments, memories of Bunny and Gregory and me in costume bowing to each other and the audience like jinxes. Nothing now can be changed as, last crying, no tears will dry, and Bunny will never change her writing of The Bear, nor Greg bear me any further gift beyond liking my poems, no new poems for him, and a big red railroad handkerchief from the country, in his sports car, so like another actor. For sentiment is always intruding on form, the immaculate disgust of the mind, beaten down by pain and the vileness of life's flickering disapproval. Endless torment, pretending to be the rose of acknowledgement, courage, and fruitless absolution, hence the word hip, to be cool, decisive, precise, yes, while the barn door hits you in the face each time you get up, because the wind, seeing you slim and gallant, rises to embrace its darling poet. It thinks I'm mysterious. All diseases are exchangeable. Wind, you'll have a terrible time smothering my clarity, a void behind my eyes, into which existence continues to stuff its wounded limbs, as I make room for them on one after another filthy page of poetry.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. This is station WORD, broadcasting from the great Stadium of Life. We have for you a play-by-play description of the greatest and most important of all gridiron classics, the Game of Life. Our game here will be underway in just a few moments. And while we await the opening whistle, we'd like to point out some interesting sidelights surrounding this momentous occasion. The weather is ideal in the stadium, even though it really makes little difference, since a game as important as this one must be played regardless of conditions. There's a tremendous crowd on hand today. The stands are literally packed with a great cloud of witnesses, as the writer of Hebrews points out. Down on the field, we can see that both teams are completing the pregame workouts. To our right are the players representing Christianity. And this Christian team, by the way, has the finest of all coaches. Noted for his unerring wisdom, this great mentor, Jesus Christ, is the model of perfection in the coaching realm. However, as we look down to our left, we see another great squad and a very cunning and clever coach. This is the team coached by Satan, the forces of evil. And believe you me, Satan and his men will be tough to handle. There's a great wave of anticipation and expectancy in the crowd as the two teams prepare for the opening kickoff. As you know, the referee for this game of life is God himself, the perfect, just, and all-seeing referee. And the rules of the game, the instructions as to how it should be played, are found in God's book, the Bible. The coaches have given their respective players their last-minute instructions, Jesus Christ telling his players, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Christ has now come off the field, and it's all up to the players whom he's just left with that last-minute challenge ringing in their ears. The outcome of this spectacle is all the more important to these alumni who are here because of the fact that the entire hope of Christianity in this, the game of life, depends upon the ball-carrying ability of average Christian. This places a heavy responsibility on average Christian, and that's the reason the eyes of the crowd will be upon him today. Both teams are lined up now for the opening kickoff. The goals of the two teams are exactly opposite, that of Christianity being the goal of heaven, while the forces of evil will head toward their goal, hell. And now it's going to be Satan's team kicking off to Christianity, and there's the referee's whistle as the game is underway. It's Criticism kicking a high end-over-end kick. It's taken on the goal line by average Christian. He starts up the field as forces of evil players move in on him. He appears a bit uncertain, but he gets across the 15. Now he cuts to his right and picks up some interference. It's Prayer and Humility. Average Christian is still going up the far sideline past the 30 with Prayer and Humility out in front clearing the way. There's one of Satan's men trying to crash through, and average Christian sidesteps beautifully at the 40, getting away from temptation. Now he runs with added confidence. He crosses the midfield stripe and makes his way toward this side of the field. But he left his interference on the other side. And now he's by himself down to the 45. He sidesteps nicely, getting away from hypocrisy, and goes to the 43, doing a nice job in the broken field. But there's a player coming up from behind. He's gaining. He dives and makes the tackle beautifully at the 40-yard line in forces of evil territory. Average Christian appeared confident that he was on his way to score. But temptation sneaked in for the tackle. And over on the far sidelines, we can see Satan pacing up and down the sidelines, getting reserves ready for action. Here's Christianity back to the line of scrimmage, and the ball is snapped this time to average Christian, who drives off his own right tackle, finds a hole, and blasts through to the 32 before the big opposing lineman, Procrastination, brings him to the ground. The tackle who opened that hole for average Christian was the very capable and important lineman, Church Attendance. He had a hole there big enough to drive the proverbial truck through, and average Christian drove through nicely until hit hard by Procrastination in the opponent's secondary. Second down two now as Christianity is out of the huddle once again. The forces of evil set up their defense, and here's the play. It's average Christian trying the middle of the line. He stopped cold after a pickup of about a yard. It was carelessness on the tackle as good intentions failed to open a hole in the line. In fact, good intentions was in the way himself on that one. Well, it's third down and a yard, and the Christianity team is calling for a timeout. Just what Christianity will do to stop Procrastination, hypocrisy, temptation, and the other forces of evil remains to be seen. We've noted in observing some of the onlookers that there are several famous and successful veterans of this big game in the stands today. They are famous alumni who are on hand to pull for men trying to follow in their footsteps. Among them are such notables as Moses, Gideon, Peter, Paul, and many, many others. It's time to go back to play now at the Stadium of Life,
Christianity out of the huddle and up to the line of scrimmage. And here's the pass from center. Again, it goes to Average Christian. Average Christian is coming around his own left end, looking for a chance to cut downfield. Now he's getting some interference and makes his cut. It's Prayer out there again. And there's Faith throwing a beautiful block as he got to the 30. He's still going strong. Faithfulness comes in to add interference to the 25 as Average Christian, running nicely, cuts to his right, leaving his interference. He's to the 23 by himself, heading goalward. But a couple of tacklers are trying desperately to catch him from behind as he gets across the 20. He'll have to hurry, and he's hit and fumbles the ball at the 15-yard line. And the ball is recovered by forces of evil. And Average Christian, fans, is hurt on the play. He doesn't get up. Average Christian remains on the ground. This boy, Temptation, can certainly get in on plays when least expected. He and Little Sins just came from out of nowhere to bring about the downfall of Average Christian. And now the coach for Christianity, Jesus Christ, has come onto the field and is talking to his ball carrier, Average Christian. Let's take a look. And it looks like Average Christian is going to stay in the ball game. Let's pick up the band music on the far side of the field.
I was the seventh child, and I was different than any of the other 10 children my mother had. Now this may seem strange, but it's true. I wouldn't tell you a lie. I could go to bed at night and dream something, and I could see things happen before they happened. And I'd get up and tell them in the morning, and after a while they got so they didn't want to hear about it. My sisters would say, "Don't you go to sleep, and if you go to sleep, don't tell us nothing in the morning." I could tell them a lot of things around the church, too, that was going to help. And they had quite a bit of respect for me, and they still do at the church that I go to. Now, I don't have the dreams as often as I did when I was active, because it seemed that I'd get a warning of how it was going to turn out and what was going to happen. I told them here not long ago. One night I was in the bed and I was dreaming, and I went to church that Sunday. I said to them, "Something's going to happen here this morning that never happened before." And they said, "What?" I said, "I dreamed that I saw some blood on the pulpit." So sure enough, when the preacher preached that Sunday, his nose began to bleed and he had to be taken out. They all said to me, "Don't dream no more." And then they'd want to know if I did dream, you know, if anything was going to happen. One time I dreamed that something was going to happen in the choir room of the church. I saw this great big old bag of dirty clothes in my dream, and I said, "Something's going to happen here today, and I can't forget it." And they said, "Well, don't tell us about it. Don't tell us." I said, "I can't tell you too much about it because something is going to be unpleasant. It's not going to be pleasant what's going to happen." And sure enough, two ladies got into it back in the choir room about the other lady's husband. I just dreamed so many things that's going to happen to me and my family, the church, my neighbors. Until now, lately, since I'm not active, I don't have too many dreams. But I see most things before it happens. If I dream anything, I always think about it a while and wait to see what's going to happen. But I haven't had any bad dreams in a long time. I used to dream good dreams, tell good things that's going to happen, just like the bad. But I can remember the bad things worse, because it always seems to happen around the church, and you just hate to see that.
You are in tune with your community radio station. It is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg. Altogether, it's Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio, also streaming on the web at kzyx.org. I wanted to let you know about an event coming up on the 9th. It's the Origami Valentine Workshop at the Fort Bragg Library, Saturday, February the 9th at 10 a.m. in the community room at the Fort Bragg Library, presenting an Origami Valentine Workshop for both adults and children. Pocket hearts and kissing lips will be taught. All materials will be provided. Children under 7 must be accompanied by an adult. If you want more info, you can contact Kathy Silva at 964-1711. I think there's plenty more to go here. I'm pretty sure of it. I promised you a little outer space action, and I'm going to go to a soundtrack album made for a UFO documentary. I'd want to say probably around 1962. I'm really a little uncertain about that, so I shouldn't even say it, but it's Flying Saucers Unlimited was the name of the piece, and it's a little strange. So we'll get into that. We'll do the A side and the B side as we move on throughout tonight's episode of Radiogram.
For many years, this planet has been under constant surveillance and observation. Unknown forces have been responsible for producing strange and unusual phenomena. Many objects have been sighted with the naked eye, caught by the high-speed shutters of military cameras, and tracked by radar. These unusual aerial objects, known as unidentified flying objects as well as flying saucers, have appeared in various shapes, sizes, and colors. Some have appeared fuzzy or blurred, while others have shone brighter than the stars. Still others were self-luminous or dull, reflecting, and even transparent at will. My investigation, which is reflected in the book Flying Saucerama, as well as in our UFO documentary film Phenomena 77, clearly indicates that UFOs are being constantly sighted in the skies above every nation under the sun. Their various shapes include round, oval, square, triangular, saucer and bell-shaped, as well as cigar-shaped. The sizes of certain UFOs stagger the imagination. Unknown flying objects are sighted both day and night as they travel at above supersonic speeds, while others float silently, deliberately, and mysteriously above the horizon. UFOs have also been tracked by civilian experts at speeds exceeding 20,000 miles per hour in our atmosphere without disintegrating. They perform unbelievable feats of aerial maneuvers, violating every rule and regulation of air traffic control, while they completely defy established laws of aerodynamics. In the opinion of the military, UFOs do not exist, yet UFOs have been classified as skyhooks, meteorites, stars, planets, reflections, high-flying Canadian geese, cloud formations, temperature inversions, weather balloons, satellites, space junk, white paper, and many other explanations that in some cases justify such an interpretation. Something has been up there for a long time. Something that is recorded in the sign language of the ancients. Some strange objects called flying shields by the early Romans, luminous discs by the Greeks. The ancient Chinese records reveal that UFOs were sighted and recorded by men whose sole task it was to maintain accurate events of strange and unusual happenings in their particular generation. The Holy Bible calls attention to UFOs by referring to them as the wheel in the middle of the wheel by Ezekiel, the flying roll or scroll by Zechariah. Job poses a challenging question when he asks, "Who are these that fly from cloud to cloud as doves to their nests?" As we travel from the musty pages of prehistory into the atomic age, we find ourselves confronted with these perplexing questions. What are flying saucers? Where have they come from? What is their purpose? Perhaps the following events will enlighten you. The time, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The date, Tuesday, June 24th, 1947. The place, 9,200 feet above Mineral, Washington, making a 180-degree turn toward a forbidden plateau of Mount Rainier. The pilot, Kenneth Arnold, a relief deputy federal United States Marshal, a deputy sheriff for Ada County, Idaho. An experienced flyer who logged more than 4,000 hours of flying time over mountainous country over a 3-year period. Then it happened. A tremendous, bright flash of light lit up the complete surface of his plane. He thought he was very close to a collision with another plane. He looked to the right, then he looked to the left, and then up, and then down, and then decided that he had been buzzed by a P-51. Then suddenly, without warning, it happened again. This time, he caught the direction from which it came. He observed, far to the left and toward the north, a formation of very bright objects coming from the vicinity of Mount Baker, flying perilously close to the mountaintops at tremendous speeds. The strange formation flew directly in front of his plane. They were flying diagonally in an echelon formation, with a larger gap in their echelon between the first four and the last five. After maneuvering back and forth, the last group of these strange, silvery, saucer-shaped objects seemed to gather speed as well as altitude at a point beyond the southwest crest of Mount Adams. Then, after another sharp maneuver, shot off into the blue at speeds that completely stagger the imagination. Thus was framed the term which was to make headlines throughout the civilized world. The term, flying saucers. Who are these people who see UFOs? Have any public officials, scientists, or military men made such statements pertaining to UFOs? The answer is quite apparent. Former Central Intelligence Agency Chief Admiral R.H. Hillencoater stated, "It is high time that this UFO secrecy is ended. It is imperative that we learn where UFOs come from and what their purpose is." Dr. J.J. Kalizowski, cosmic ray scientist for the United States Navy projects, who with two other scientists sighted a cigar-shaped UFO near Minneapolis, Minnesota, stated, "They were strange, terrifically fast. I think that the government should set up a 24-hour alert with radar, telescope, sky cameras, and other instruments." Then the report from Captain Richard Addix, TWA pilot, who with a full crew and 7 passengers saw a glowing UFO pacing their airline near South Bend, Indiana, stated, "Before this, I wasn't convinced by saucer reports. Now I know that they exist." An interesting report from William Lear, winner of the Collier Aviation Trophy and president of Lear Aircraft Corporation of California, who sighted a UFO in bright daylight. He said, "I believe that flying saucers come from outer space and are piloted by beings of a superior race." Herman Oberth, co-designer of the V-2 rocket, said, "It is my thesis that flying saucers come from other worlds outside our solar system." Albert M. Chopp, former Air Force press officer in charge of UFO information at the Pentagon, stated, "One thing is absolutely certain. We are being watched by beings from outer space." Yes, my friend, this is an accumulation of statements by men who cannot be categorized as kooks. These are men of character, men in whose hands has been placed tremendous responsibility, even to maintaining the general security of our nation. But what of other countries? UFOs have totally ignored international boundaries. Argentina, England, Canada, Africa, New Zealand, Germany, Russia, Portugal, Thailand, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Mexico, Israel, Cuba, Italy, France, China, Japan, Brazil, Switzerland, India, Australia, as well as every other nation under the sun, have reported UFOs in their skies. It seems rather strange that in the face of all these reports, still a shroud of secrecy engulfs the UFO mystery. The reason for this has been presented as follows. The military clearly explains that in no uncertain terms, to date, only 7.7% of the many thousands of UFO sightings are still unexplainable. They also maintain that they have no evidence that UFOs are interplanetary or pose any potential threat to the security of the United States. In a recent letter to me, they stated that as an act of faith, F-A-I-T-H, UFOs can be considered manned or unmanned extraterrestrial craft, but as a scientific fact, there has been no authentic evidence, scientific or otherwise, presented to or discovered by the Air Force to support this conclusion. And yet, reports still pour in. People from every rank and file, from every cultural and ethnic origin, from every station of life, continue to report seeing and photographing UFOs. The great mystery continues to deepen. A solution is being carefully and analytically sought by honest researchers and investigators who are capable of executing such an assignment with an open mind. That is, a mind that is totally free from any outside influence of either political or military pressure. The flying saucer mystery has likewise had a profound effect upon religious leaders throughout the entire world. Some of them take the position that if UFOs are proven to be interplanetary, the Holy Bible would be rendered ineffective, while others maintain that UFOs would diminish the purpose and the plan of Almighty God for this planet Earth. It is quite childish to attempt to limit the omnipresence as well as the omniscience of the great Creator. Furthermore, it might well be that the appearance of UFOs in our skies might be in keeping with the last day prophecies, such as, in the last days there shall be signs in the skies, signs in the stars, signs in the sun and in the moon. Strange sights and fearful signs shall appear in the heavens. Perhaps what this planet really needs is something that will jolt us out of our self-centered, selfish outlook on life in general. But time will tell. Time is yet to be conquered by man. But when the time is right, perhaps the greatest revelation of all time will dawn upon us. Yes, my friend, this might very well be the year. This could be the day. The day that no earthly power, governmental or otherwise, will be able to keep the secret of the saucers from the human family on this, the third planet from the sun. Until then, keep looking up, search the heavens, be alert at all times, and remember, truth has a habit of marching on. Thank you.
United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the earth. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottomland of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. I was there. I saw it. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it is the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pumped billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. Now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. Come on, let's hear it. Does any other country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing Jumbo Jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy and you will find men on the moon, not once, but several times, and safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They are here on our streets, most of them, unless they are breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said, the hell with the rest of the world? Let someone else buy the foreign bonds. Let someone else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France, Germany, and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both are still broke. I can name you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone. And I'm one Canadian who's damned tired of hearing them kicked around. They will come out of this thing with their flag high. And when they do, they are entitled to thumb their nose at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these, but there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans that it was broke. This year's disasters have taken it all. And nobody, but nobody, has helped.
Brink. Man himself could bring judgment upon the race. Many historians are now emphasizing we're at the end. And so the human race stands at this moment on the brink.
The savings and loans deposits are backed by the full faith and credit of the government, and they are sound. Who are the American people? They are sound. They are good. Dollar good. And I just want to assure the American people of that. dollar good. And I just want to assure the American people of that. And I just want to assure the American people of that. Assure the American people of that. We're not going to let this Soviet thing put us in a mood of a foot dragger. We're going to be out front. We're not going to let this Soviet thing put us in a mood of a foot dragger. We're going to be out front.
And so the human race stands at this moment on the brink. And I think a part of the student rebellion, I think a part of the almost frantic quest for pleasure and having a good time is the shadow of the possibility of the destruction of the human race.
We're going to be out front. There's no reason to suggest that all we have to do is react to a speech by the General Secretary. We're going to be out front. We're going to be out front. We're going to be out front. Soviet thing. Put us in a mood of a foot dragger. We're going to be out front. There's no reason to suggest that all we have to do is react to a speech by the General Secretary. I want to take the offense. I want to take the offense. I want to take the offense. Take the offense. I want to take the offense.
I, George Herbert Walker Bush. I, George Herbert Walker Bush.
I want to take the offense in moving this relationship forward and taking steps that are in the interest of the freedom around the world. What would be the fair and noble way to handle follow-up questions as we do these things? Would it be good to have them or not have them? What would be the fair and noble way to handle follow-up questions as we do these things? Would it be good to have them or not have them? But then you cut out. But then if we do it, everybody else doesn't get a chance to answer questions. I'm about to pull a ripcord on this thing. About to pull a ripcord on this thing. I'm about to pull a ripcord on this thing. I'm about to pull a ripcord on this.
Tell me, what is feeding this black Jewish antagonism? Tell me, what is feeding this black Jewish antagonism? What is feeding this black Jewish antagonism? Black Jewish antagonism. Jewish antagonism, according to your finding, could get worse. Tell me, what is feeding this black Jewish antagonism?
Back in the civil rights days, I think blacks and Jews each had very high expectations of each other. I don't think blacks expected very much of whites by and large.
And I think a part of the student rebellion, the almost frantic quest for pleasure and having a good time, And so the human race stands at this moment on the brink.
Everybody else doesn't get a chance to answer questions. I'm about to pull a ripcord on this thing.
Word. I, George Herbert Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
Bush is a sixth cousin several times removed in his closest kinship to Franklin Roosevelt. And he is a seventh cousin four times removed of Lincoln.
But about how many people in America would be as closely related to Lincoln as Bush is?
10 million or less, probably.
And the relationship to Franklin Delano Roosevelt?
As many as 100 million could be related to FDR somehow.
But about how many people in America would be as closely related to Lincoln as Bush is?
10 million or less, probably.
And the relationship to Franklin Delano Roosevelt?
As many as 100 million could be related to FDR somehow, but I would lower it to half that.
50 million cousins, not what you call an intimate family, but in the honeymoon season, we seem to buy it.
Times when the future seems thick as a fog, you sit and wait, hoping the mist will lift and reveal the right path. hoping the mist will lift and reveal the right path. Times when the future seems thick as a fog, you sit and wait, hoping the mist will lift and reveal the right path. But this is a time when the future seems a door you can walk right through.
The noise, the pressures, the decisions, the noise. A man screams for quiet. Sanity in the confusion. A man wants release from the pressures. They say Christ cares and wants to help. No money-back guarantee you will be free of noise, confusion, pain, pressures, decisions. He just says, trust me, man. Trust me. I've been through it all. I understand, and I'll help you, and there's hope in that.
The preceding brought to you by your station in observance of the 450th anniversary of the Reformation.
Aquarius, the 11th sign of the zodiac, ruled by the electrifying planet of Uranus. Aquarius, you are the people who will take us into another dimension. You will take us to the moon and beyond that. Where else shall we go? Only you can tell. Because you are the inventors, the men of tomorrow. But sometimes you forget that you have to live now, as well as looking into the distant future. Aquarius, children of tomorrow, the great electrifying force that takes us into a new age, a new dimension, a new world, and perhaps a life we lesser people cannot understand. Aquarius, do you know where you lead us?
It was the night flight from Houston. Almost perfect visibility. You could see the lights from all the little Texas towns far below. And I was sitting next to a 52-year-old woman who had never been on a plane before. And her son had sent her a ticket and said, "Mom, you've raised 10 kids. It's time you got on a plane. She was sitting in the window seat, staring out. And she kept talking about the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper and pointing. And suddenly, I realized that she thought we were in outer space, looking down at the stars. And I said, you know, I think those lights down there are the lights from little towns.
I know there's lots of things inside your head, and one of them could be the question, what's inside the Earth?
Our Earth is like a great big grapefruit, 25,000 miles around. On the outside, land and water and the atmosphere I've found. Inside the Earth is rock and metal, 25,000 miles around. Lighter rock is near the surface, iron and nickel are way deep down. The upper part is coal, the crust, the center is the core. From core to crust, the Earth is just a lot of rock and ore. Our Earth is like a great big grapefruit, 25,000 miles around. You can dig from here to China if you could dig through the ground. But you can't.
Picture the combination of joining a trade publication, radio seminar, and radio program into a trade publication for the broadcaster. What do you come up with? An audio magazine. A trade publication for the mind's eye, to be read with the ear. This is a Programmer's Digest, a bi-weekly trade magazine covering the communication scene for all broadcasters, from the programming department right on up to the GM. We're all in the business to promote better programming, and that goes for the gentleman on the street with the rate cards, selling space on that program. This is your thing, and Programmer's Digest wants you.
Here's the publisher and editor of Programmer's Digest, Buddy Blake.
Programmer's Digest is to be an audio periodical, serving as educator, entertainer, advisor, forum, idea bank, but most of all, a source of inspiration for those in love of those things that are broadcasting. In coming months, audio articles will be published covering all phases of the broadcast industry, from programming to management and all areas between. This in hopes of helping you develop as part of a team of professionals and a common goal, helping you foster pride in task, attaining true craftsmanship. We'll scan the spectrum of broadcast concepts, hear from top programmers and management, covering all formats, large and small markets. Each issue will be designed as a collector's item, a seminar and ready reference library of educational information for study and analysis at a moment's notice. Music to grow by. PD is to be your sounding board of ideas, opinions, and ambitions. With your support and through you, Programmer's Digest will be the voice of broadcasting.
English is full of relics of vocabulary that remind us that other days thought other things important. There was a time when English-speaking men lived very much by hunting. They had special words for congregations of animals, a flock of sheep and a herd of cattle, but a pride of lions, a skulk of foxes, and a gaggle of geese. They also had special words for the carving of each of the animals and birds of the chase when they arrived on the table ready to eat. Nowadays, if we saw a pile of game birds and wanted them carved, the cook might say,
"Hey, Mac.
Yeah?
Cut up them birds, will you?"
For nowadays, one game bird is much like another, out of season.
But to the Elizabethans, game birds were the very meat of life, and their carving required a special and ornate vocabulary.
You, sitter.
Anon?
Dismember that heron, unbrace that mallard, allay that pheasant, wing that partridge, display that quail. Unjoint that bittern, thigh that woodcock, lift that swan, and rear that goose. As for that curlew...
Aye, sir.
Unlatch it.
A noble handful, that has been replaced by other rich treasures of vocabulary, as our language, like all other languages, has changed to reflect our culture.
As we Eskimos found out when I was sent down to study your language. Your language is like ours very often. Our Eskimo language, like many other North American Indian languages, is polysynthetic.
How's that, polysynthetic?
Not Eskimo word, English word, polysynthetic.
Oh.
One word means a whole phrase. One word has in it the compressed wreckage of a phrase. Thus, suppose we wish to say in Eskimo this. When they were about to go out, they would take the boot stretcher, using it to thrash the dogs, because they usually stay in the entrance passage. That is 28 words in English. In Eskimo, it is 6 words. Anilarunik, when they were about to go out. Kamiut, the boot stretcher. Tingusa, they would take it. Anataralongo, using it to thrash with. Kimit, the dogs. Torsone, Teomata, because they usually stay in the entrance passage.
But where does English contain words that are the compressed wreckage of a phrase, as you put it?
In English, not exactly like Eskimo, but nearly like. The other day, I saw a newspaper headline.
UNRWA DP's Laud UNESCO.
UNRWA DP's Laud UNESCO. Back to my dictionary I go. There I find the word Laud, nothing else. The other words are missing. Then it is explained to me. These other words are not normal English. They are instead the compressed wreckage of phrases. And 4 words, UNRWA DP's Laud UNESCO, means...
United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Agency, Displaced Persons, Laud the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization.
17 words compressed into 4. Well, that is about the average for Eskimo.
Again, language reflects culture. As modern life sets up more elaborate agencies and organizations, modern language adapts itself and forms words and builds polysynthetic forms almost like the Eskimo. Other languages besides English have been doing this. German, for example. Gestapo stands for Geheime Staatspolizei, secret state police. FLAC is the compressed wreckage of Flugzeugabwehrkanone, anti-aircraft cannon.
As we think, so we speak. As we speak, so we think. As we are taught reading, writing, and arithmetic, as we are taught our manners and the way things are done in the world we live in, so we are taught our language. And as we learn our language from our mother's lips, we also learn the customs and attitudes of our society. For language reflects these customs and attitudes. That is, language reflects culture.
Just a few steps up the street, turn in at the white gate, up the red brick steps and down the hall through those swinging doors, and into that apple arbor, better known as Katie's kitchen. And here she is, Katie Forbes.
And today we're going to take those apples and cook them for a favorite old dish called Rosie Apple Halves. You'll need 6 baking apples, 1 cup of water, 1 cup of sugar, 10 drops of red food coloring, and 1 stick of cinnamon. Core, pare, and cut the apples in half. Then combine the water and sugar, add the red vegetable coloring and cinnamon stick, and cook for 10 minutes. Place the apples in the syrup, cover, and simmer slowly until tender, basting occasionally. Remove the apples from the syrup to a platter and cool. Then use for salad, dessert, or a meat accompaniment. Wishing you the most rosy apple halves, this has been Katie Forbes in Katie's Kitchen.
Katie's Kitchen is brought to you by this station and the Lee and Perrins Company.
Hey, weeds! It's time to say goodbye to you. Hey, weeds, I'm tired of seeing you growing in my vegetables. Hey, weeds, goodbye to you. I'm saying goodbye to you, thanks to Dacthal.
Now, you won't see weeds growing in your vegetables either if you use Dacthal Weed Killer before those weeds come up. Dacthal kills weeds before they ever see the light of day, so your crops grow bigger and they grow better. And safe? Why, Dacthal's been cleared for use on more than 30 food crops, plus cotton and soybeans. And it's awfully tough on weeds. One Dacthal application usually lasts a season. Leaves no harmful soil residue either. Gives you weed-free fields with a lot less work. So spray on Dacthal and sing.
Hey, weeds! It's time to say goodbye to you, thanks to Dacthal.
Pre-emerge weed killer, that is, at farm stores everywhere.
Now, here's a song that should make you feel good when you sing it and feel even better when you digest it. It's called What Food Should We Eat Every Day? Good health depends upon the food that we eat every day. Our body's need and not our mood should guide us all the way. Just like a car, our body needs its fuel, so they say. What provides it? 1. Cheese and milk a pint a day for growing children more. 2. Citrus fruit, tomato salad, green and cabbage raw. 3. Green and yellow cooked and uncooked vegetables galore. And besides this, 4. Other fruits and vegetables, potatoes plain or sweet. 5. Cereals and bread. 6. Poultry, fish or meat. 7. Butter or some other spread with vitamins complete. And besides this, eggs at least 4 a week. Good health depends upon the food that we eat every day. Our body's need and not our mood should guide us all the way. Just like a car, our body needs its fuel, so they say, let's provide it.
Hello, everyone. It's time for poetry. I submit to you the following. It's entitled, I Eat With Gusto, Damn You Bet, by one Jonathan Richman. When I eat like I do it, I use not fork nor spoon, no grace nor culture to it, when I call my own tune. For I eat with gusto, damn you bet, a regular canine cruncher. Except, truth be told, I'm sloppier yet than many a dog food muncher. I eat a pound, I eat a ton, and no, there ain't much I cuts up. And while I'm having merry fun, bystanders puke their guts up. The FBI sent someone by who handles health affairs. I had not finished my cream pie when he chanced up the stairs. Why did he turn the other way? Why did he leave so quick? Will he come back another day? Did something make him sick? I eat with gusto, damn, you bet! A regular doggy diner. No, don't bring me napkins, waiter, sir. Just bring some trash can, Lila. Whilst wandering by a juice bar, I spied a tempting beverage. Since I would have been last in line, I used my fearsome leverage. For in my pocket was some food, which I took from its wrapper. The patrons watched it being chewed, and of course headed for the crapper. For I eat with gusto, damn, you bet! For gusto, I'm the boss! For yea, my nose, it is in the salad, and lo, my chin, it is in the sauce. I eat with gusto, damn you bet, we're sailing round the cape. Keel all him, said the bosun, there must be no escape. One sunny day in Paris, an elegant cafe. A phone call there, a phone call here, and the gendarmes took me away. I said, mais qu'est-ce qui se passe ici? I said, mais qu'est-ce que c'est? They said, such eating, it is criminel. And crime, it does not pay. For I eat with gusto, damn you bet. My banner, yea, unfurled. My shirt is covered with mustard, and my hair with ketchup curled. Goodbye to Egypt, Greece, and Rome, the ancient world, goodbye. May squalor be my summer home, and filth be my necktie, for I eat with gusto, damn you bet. Oh, and I eat with gusto, damn you bet, my country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory. Somebody died who watched me eat in a restaurant one spell. He woke up and saw me eating beans and knew that he'd gone to hell. For he eats with gusto. Damn, we bet. They're calling from the south. They want to stop my gusto. They want to close my mouth. You eat with gusto. Yeah, that's great. Now let us off this bus. Wait a minute. I haven't finished eating up stuff yet. We'll call you. Don't call us.
You are still in tune with Radiogram right here on your community radio station. It is KZYX and Z. We are just about done here. Really only one more piece to go, but we've had a great time. I want to make sure you know to tune in next week on Radiogram for the big love show that we're going to do. Hopefully you'll enjoy every bit of that as much as you've enjoyed tonight, if the calls are any indication. I think that you did. A quick reminder also that tomorrow night at 7, you might want to tune in to Queer Ear with Tara, Jody, and Catherine as they discuss hot topics for the lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender communities for the year. Catherine's going to interview gay poet Greg Shapiro discussing his new book, Protection. And as always, Jody serves up our national and international news, local LGBT announcements, all bookended by new music by out artists. So you'll want to be sure to tune in for Queer Ear tomorrow night. That's Thursday night at 7 p.m. With that, I think we're going to go to this last bit of tribute for the passing of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And it's a little something you might be familiar with from the Monkees. It's part of the Head soundtrack, and they definitely, this piece was definitely partially inspired anyway by the Maharishi, and so I thought it would be a fine thing to go out with and take you right up to Rockin' Pneumonia here on your community radio station. It is KZYX and Z.
Out.
Oh,
down. Get out of here.
Hey, what's going on?
Move it out.
Oh, hello, officer. Certainly glad to...
Shut up. Okay, weirdos.
All right, fellas, will you come forward, please?
Who's that?
All right, now jump up and down a little.
Jump
fellas,
this?
Get lost
what
in it. There you go. Very good. Look, you're supposed to be dandruff, fellas. Will you work at it, please? Jump up and down a little bit. Good.
Dandruff.
That's better.
Dandruff.
That's good.
Dandruff.
That's better.
Dandruff.
That's good.
Dandruff.
Right. And I'll tell you something else, too. The same thing goes for Christmas.
He's crazy.
Boys, don't never, but never.
make fun of no cripples.
Somebody come up and giggle at you. That's a violation of your civil rights.
Gun bait. That's what the world is full of. That's what it's based on. That's what this economy is based on.
Are you telling me that you don't see the connection between government and laughing at people?
Well, let me tell you one thing, son. Nobody ever lends money to a man with a sense of humor.
We were speaking of belief, beliefs and conditioning. All belief possibly could be said to be the result of some conditioning. Thus, the study of history is simply the study of one system of beliefs deposing another, and so on and so on and so on. A psychologically tested belief of our time is that the central nervous system, which feeds its impulses directly to the brain, the conscious and subconscious, is unable to discern between the real and the vividly imagined experience. If there is a difference, and most of us believe there is, am I being clear? For to examine these concepts requires tremendous energy and discipline. To experience the now without preconception or belief, to allow the unknown to occur and to occur, requires clarity. But where there is clarity, there is no choice. And where there is choice, there is misery. But then why should anyone listen to me? Or should I speak? Since I know nothing.
The whole foulest thing is happening. I mean, why don't we use trust and things? Millions!
Suck it.
Thank you.
it before the venom reaches my heart.
Okay, I will.
Wow. Wow. How am I gonna follow that one? That is let's give it a try here.
Two.
Yeah, one, two.
Yeah, everybody kinda relax and knows what Lou said. One.
There we go.
Two. One, two, three, four.
Groundhog coming on Groundhog Day, yeah. Groundhog coming to bring a lady summer along, oh, yeah. Tell me, Mr. Groundhog,